started rallying is when we saw
Quiet.
Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Hello, everybody. This is Dave Lincoln. It's so good to have you joining us again. I want to say thank you so much. Also, I want to start out with a quick apology for missing the program last week. There was an operator error, I guess we'll attribute it to. We've changed the program to a longer format, and in so doing, I ended up inadvertently, evidently, deleting the program out of Block Talk the last week. For those of you who dialed in last week and we were not there, my apologies. It was, again, operator error. Again, we're mortgage professionals. We're not professional radio folks, but personalities. But we're endeavoring each week to bring you current up-to-date information on what's happening in the industry. And I tell you, we've got a lot to talk about. Some things to get caught up from last week and some things again this week. You have to excuse me. My voice is just starting to come back to me after escaping me for almost a week there, having a cold. But again, we have guests, our regular guests on the program today. We have Alice Alvey of Mortgage U. Alice, always so good to have your comment. We're going to get into so much of what you have to say, and there's a lot today. And a little bit later on the program, the interest rate segment, talking about what's happening in interest rates and the ups and downs and where this thing is going. We have joining us again, and we're honored to have them, is Joe Farr and Scott Sanderson of MBS Quoteline. And if you guys all subscribed, all the listeners subscribed to MBS Quoteline, you would have just gotten this really cool update that I get constantly as a subscriber, and it talked about favorable pricing is possible. So I just want to put in a brief word about that. If you subscribe to them, it's a great service, and it will give you up-to-the-moment updates on pricing. Joe and Scott, good to have you on the program. Let's start off with you guys. Give us a synopsis of what's going on with interest rates. Joe?
Well, thanks for that word, Dave. This morning, mortgage prices, or MBS prices, which drive mortgage rates and mortgage rate sheets, opened the morning a little bit lower than they ended Friday, about a quarter of a point lower, but have since made their way to where they're still a little bit negative to last Friday's close, but at the high for the day right now, which is about 5/32 better than they were, which is why we put out that favorable price change notice that there's some people that have put prices out early in the day that are certainly considering the opportunity to improve their price sheets and to make their make the mortgage rates a little better for their customers and their customers' customers. So good when mortgage rates are moving that direction.
Yes, it is. Always good to see him heading in that direction, keep things stimulated along. What do you see on the calendar that's coming up, Joe and Scott?
Yeah, well, today we were surprised by better-than-expected new home sales. This coupled with last week's better-than-expected existing home sales is really kind of giving a shot in the arm to the housing market. The amount of sales in both categories is somewhat attributable to relatively low mortgage rates and nice prices, relatively lower home prices, and then the tax credits having a lot to do with what's going on. In fact, right now we're seeing a pretty nice pickup, or at least in the month of May and June, we saw pretty nice pickups in both housing starts and permits. Somewhat attributable, I think, to the fact that it takes several months to build a home, and they want to get those homes ready to be sold before the November 30th deadline to receive the $8,000 home buyer tax credit.
I think that is a big contributing factor. I think also interest rates remaining low are looking like they're really doing everything they can to keep them in a favorable range to stimulate home sales. Also, Joe, is it, and Scott, do you think it's much having to do with the seasonality? I mean, this is prime time. People are trying to buy homes before school starts. We also got summertime going on. It's a whole lot easier to move during these times, and we know that this has historically been a time where home sales are higher. Has that been factored into this?
Yeah, mostly these numbers are seasonally adjusted in comparisons from month to month, so that could be some of it, but the effort is to try to eliminate that aspect of it. But just the fact that we're coming off the bottom, it feels like, and we're getting favorable mortgage rates and that tax credit sitting out there, I think that there is just more activity. I know this is a regional thing, and some people would say it's not happening here, but on all in all, I think it's coming off the bottom. These are still very low numbers, mind you, but they are better than they have been. In fact, existing home sales last week for June represented 3 months in a row that those numbers were higher month over month. So,
and we should remind our listeners
I'd add to that after we backed off those higher rates that we saw run up in the month of June, rates are still really pretty good right now, and there has been a lot of activity. And I don't know about other states, but in Texas, the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs has come up with a way for people to borrow that tax credit ahead of time. Mm-hmm. They do that on a second lien, and so it's really added some liquidity there for down payment purposes, and they're starting to be, in our origination business, a lot more buzz about that, and that's really garnering some interest.
Scott, are you seeing that translate in people getting pre-qualified? Or are you actually seeing more activity through the door, or how would you characterize it from your?
Yes, well, really both, Dave, because, now what that's done is it's monetized or it's put liquidity in their pocket. It's one thing to come up with the money and then wait for an amended tax return to get your $8,000. People were trying to figure out all ways to do that, gift, what have you. But now you have a legitimate way that some investors will buy a loan with a second lien secured by, community housing, a nonprofit organization. So that's certainly given that a shot in the arm.
That is encouraging. Again, this is slightly a departure from interest rates. But from directly to interest rates, but it's encouraging to see the home starts. I mean, this is something that we have been hoping and wanting to see, and there's been a lot of talk on the various business news networks, Fox being one of them, about the fact that home sales, we are seeing a bottom form, and everyone's anticipating this actually taking us out and actually, we've seen the worst, and good days lie ahead in the not-too-distant future. We're all hoping for that, but the fact that a lot of this is coming through tax credits, there are a number of people that are very dubious about this establishing a true firm bottom. Now, while it may establish a bottom in housing sales, and if interest rates can be kept low, then we're going to be in a position where we may, in fact, see this thing come out. But the reality is there's so much stimulus money out there, and factoring that all into it, this is going to be sustainable. Any thoughts on that, Joe and Scott?
Well, I'd quote what Bernanke's comments were as released in the minutes of the Fed last week, and Bernanke is, and the Fed has calmed the markets. In fact, last week we saw a nice improvement in rates early in the week last week because of those comments, and he essentially said that in their estimation, inflation, which would be the concern that would come along with having all this liquidity and stimulus in the economy, that inflation really shouldn't be a concern for the next couple of years anyway. He felt like jobs and job creation was going to be slow and coming, and therefore there'd be less pressure on inflation. So, that was a nice thing to really improve mortgage rates last week, and should go a long way toward keeping mortgage rates low. Contrary to that, though, the second half of the week, Dave, was hit negatively for rates by the fact that there were lots of corporate announcements saying their companies had earned more money than expected, and that as those indications that the recovery may be coming along, that the companies are earning, that there may be more money to spend after the fact, was negative for mortgage rates. So we saw last week a very nice drop in rates in the first few days, and an equal amount of rise in the last few days. So it's a tale of two parts last week.
Yes, it is. And the good news for the economy is has a tendency to be bad news for interest rates. And so it's a delicate balance right now. We need housing to lead us out of this. But if it starts leading us out and we actually see the markets trade in a traditional format and we see interest rates starting to climb back up, it could be the very thing that killed it. Again, I apologize for coughing away here a little bit more. Any more as we wrap up this segment, Scott?
Well, I would look at the on the calendar this week is a couple pretty important things, and people ought to be aware. On Friday, the first look at the second quarter GDPs to be released, and that is a very broad measure of overall economic activity, and a surprise there, especially a surprise to the upside, could be harmful to mortgage rates. But all through this week, today, tomorrow, Thursday, Wednesday, and Thursday are Treasury auctions. CNBC
huge,
this morning, yeah, they summed up that $230 billion of new notes and bills are to be auctioned this week. Now, some of those are just to pay off others that are maturing, but there's still a very, very large amount of treasuries to be auctioned off this week. And in the 2, 5, and 7 year categories, which mortgage investors will pay more attention to, those are to happen on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So
that would be a big
our eyes on that.
That's going to be a big indicator and some indication. Now, we saw our news report last week talking about China and wanting to still play very actively in the role. They're talking about their currency. And how does that play in? Are you familiar with the reports recall the reports I'm referring to, Joe?
Well, I do know that there's a group of representative Chinese government meeting with the Obama administration this week. And I think that's a fairly standard meeting. It's Obama's expressed a desire to have better ties with China. Part of that is to discuss the economic, how the two companies are intertwined, and China is going to express concern about things about like the value of the dollar and the level of the U.S. trade deficit or the budget deficit, and the U.S. is going to talk about the concerns about the deficit and trade with China. But, anytime China is involved in discussions like this, you sure hope that things go well and that they will leave with a favorable taste in their mouth.
The MBS market definitely needs a foreign participation.
Yeah, and China's leading and has been, and we need them continue to lead the way. How many years ago would we ever have thought that this would be the case, that we're hoping the Chinese remain healthy and strong in our markets? It's quite an interesting scenario. Well, just take a quick break after this brief word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Well, we love that voice. That's Andy Alvey in the background doing these radio spots for us. We're so grateful for Andy and the job he's doing on it. You can tell he's a professional. He's made the transition out of radio into this, into the mortgage industry. But, man, we're so glad that he still has that in his background. So, Andy, thank you for all those spots. We really appreciate it. Alice, there is certainly a lot going up in the legislative update segment here. So let's lead off with you. Would you get into some of the things going on? My goodness sake, home secured credit, the proposed rules. Let's jump into that. This has huge ramifications, and it's coming at us fast.
Oh, and, here we go with another 674-page document we all have to try and get to the bottom of.
We needed your spare time.
Right, right. It's a light read, you know, or if you're out of sleeping pills or something. But the heavy part of this for, I think, a lot of folks is the beginning. In the very beginning of this, you know, if you search it for the word yield spread premium, it comes up way too often because this seems to be a big focus of the beginning of this, that they're effectively trying to ban originators from earning a yield spread premium. And in the beginning with the definition, it includes overage. So they go on to say that anytime we're saying yield spread, we really mean overage as well, because it goes on and on for pages about how they believe there's a conflict of interest between a loan officer getting compensated for a higher rate and at the same time trying to put the customer in the best product. So that's probably one of the biggest pieces.
I tell you, that is, I mean, this is so significant. And here's the thing that Joe brought up when we were on our pre-show program, and he says, you know, is this legislation or is this rulemaking? And I think it's a huge point that Obama has not changing things, forcing things through a legislation. He's doing this through rulemaking. Expand on that a little bit, Alice.
Well, we were waiting to see which way this was going to go. So you might, those of you on the listening in might remember, or maybe we can fill in a little bit, that, you know, President Obama came out with his financial regulatory and changes and plan, and we weren't sure which direction parts of this were going to take, whether it was going to be going through, you know, the bill process or the rulemaking. Well, now we know. So last Thursday, the Federal Reserve Board published this proposed rule. It's called Home Secure Credit, but it's really a modification to our current Regulation Z. And they believe they have authority to do it this way under the Homeownership Equity Protection Act that gave them authority for consumer protection. So they've got this piece. Loan officers would not be able to be paid yield spread unless the compensation from the borrower went straight to the loan officer, which, you know, opens up an entirely new can of worms. But
right.
And then it imposes additional disclosures and changes to the APR. So, but the loan officer discussion, I'm sure, is the biggest one.
Well, I think that so many of the listeners we have on here are loan officers out there and going, that's just going to create a lot of anxiety. We need to expand on that. But the reality is, it's brand new. It's just last Thursday. We can't expand on it that much yet because we're just trying to digest this. But I think it's so critical for you to take the time to go on there. Again, the website that they can go to, that this is thoroughly published and for this exciting read, you know, quote-unquote easy read. Alice, where can they go to find this information again?
Well, I think if you Google, or you search for the Federal Reserve Board, they actually have the publication right now. You can find it in several places, govtrack.gov, tracks, you know, different bills if you want to actually look at the bill. The Federal Reserve Board website has the press release dated July 23rd that has all the links. Now, this is affecting closed-end mortgages, so our regular first mortgages, as well as a big chunk of rules that would affect your home equity lines of credit and make those disclosures much more extensive. There's a big impact to annual percentage rates, too, in this proposed rule, as it would, the references, it would include most fees and costs paid by consumers would be included in this finance charge in APR, whereas now it's just certain types of fees. So, again, trying to put more fees in the APR means then it changes that tool for consumers for shopping.
And this is definitely going to have an impact for those with excellent credit or those that are credit impaired.
Oh, absolutely. You know, in the loan officer compensation, Joe, you earlier brought up a big point about how do you factor that in when, you know, the loan officer works for a bank, and how do you determine what's an overage and what can be paid and not paid?
Well, and it strikes me as interesting that over the last 18 months or so, we've seen a lot of shift from entrepreneurs moving out of small mortgage company operations where they got a percentage, they basically kept the profit, to becoming employees of net branches. And it strikes me as this will limit compensation of those people as employees, whereas if they were still entrepreneurs owning their business, they'd be able to earn a profit on the loan. The reason they moved were good, and that warehouse capacities or warehouse facilities were hard to find, and investor equity requirements were growing to be unwieldy. But you know, some of them may wish they'd stayed the way they were.
Well, we're certainly seeing a trend recently where there's been a surge of a lot of brokers wanting to become bankers again. And I think there's a lot I apologize for my voice, but there's been a lot of interest in that recently. And, I mean, a surge of calls coming into our company. I think we're the leading consulting firm in the U.S. that does a lot of these broker-to-banker conversions. And, again, the biggest challenge, as you pointed out, Joe, has been finding warehouse lines of credit. We're seeing more and more, just community banks getting into the warehouse line. It's a trickle. And there's a huge, just to do a quick divest and rabbit trail off to the side here, is divert off into this for the topic of warehouse lending briefly. There's still a lot of concern about the acquisition or the refunding of Colonial Bank that has about $4 billion in outstandings, in warehouse outstandings. If that goes away, we're going to see, again, a huge impact on all the community banks that are coming in to try to meet this need. They see the opportunity. We had a conference call with another one yesterday, last week, Alice and I did. We're seeing good indication that there is interest in the community banks, but it's not going to come close to picking up the $4 billion that could go away if Colonial is not successful in getting themselves recapitalized. And so there's a lot of things pending in the warehouse world. I think we're going to continue to see the whole warehouse banking world somewhat up in the air as we see some entities going, possibly going away. Nat City is scheduled to close down all its warehouse lines, and in November of this year, Colonial is very much the quest. That transaction is, there's a lot of concern whether or not that transaction is going to go through. Again, the phones that Taylor Bean and Whitaker are leading the charge to bring in additional capital, but unfortunately, that is not. Is not sailing as quite as easy as many had hoped, and there's some question whether or not that's going to go through. But now, going back to this, how that all impacts us. Scott, you are the voice of so many originators out there. You're so close to the world of origination. Being an originator, owning a mortgage company, you understand this. What's your thoughts on yield spread premiums being banned and then a really heavy regulation on loan compensation, loan originator compensation? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, really, Dave, many thoughts. My mind's spinning thinking, of all the different implications of this. Like Joe brought up, someone that's a net branch, they view themselves still as somewhat of an entrepreneur, but in the strictest sense, they're really an employee of the company. What
right.
impact does that have on them, and do they just get a flat fee to originate a loan, and how is that flat fee determined, and does that just set a company rate, period, and you get some, amount per loan, maybe, whatever that is. It certainly would change the fundamental way that companies operate, loan officers are compensated, interest rates are quoted. It will be interesting to see. Alice, could you fill us in? I think it's important. What does proposed rule mean, really? What's the timeline here? There's probably a comment period.
Well, we have our typical 120-day comment period, and that's this call to action, that we've brought up before, that when something like this comes out, you have to look at, whether you're a consumer or a loan officer, this has a lot of negative sides to it. And so you have to speak up, and so we have our 120 days to respond and send comments to our legislature. The MBA Mortgage Bankers Association has the advocacy group that you can automatically get a link straight to your congressman to respond to. It's the Action Alliance. So I think that's what people have to have a heads up about. If you're in this industry, speak up and say something, because I think, we've talked a little bit about how's the compensation structure going to work. Is it going back to the 80s where you split your origination fee? And does that ultimately mean that, origination isn't going to be 1 point anymore? It's going to move to 1.5 or 2 points, and we're just going to change the name of the fee from yield spread to something else.
Well, this cuts two ways. The presumption here and what it's trying to attack is presumably the overcharging of consumers.
Right.
And that brokers are, steering them towards, higher or loans that result in higher compensation to them. But there's not an originator on the call that hasn't at one time or another had a pretty big piece of business that was pretty clean. Maybe it had high credit scores, a big W-2 is going to be a very easy loan to do. They did a $400,000 loan for less than a point. Well, if you take those pricing decisions out of an originator's hand, there's going to be the other side of that ledger, that consumer that's not going to get as good a deal as they might have otherwise gotten. Because I can promise you, without naming names, when you go to the big boys, they're not going to be doing $300,000 and $400,000 loans for 0.75%.
Absolutely. That's such a good point.
Well, and the discussion, too, is how does loan amount adjustments factor into that? So that is an area that they are requesting for comment about. Okay, they can identify interest rate fluctuations costing the customer more, but what about all the other areas that are affecting price? Now how do you factor those in?
I tell you, those of you that are listening to this program, we encourage you during this 120-day comment period, get together with your local PACs. Get together with your local associations and sound the alarm. Sound the bell on this. Get your comments in. This is having a far-reaching impact on this, and it's coming. 120 days is such a short period of time, and we could be facing a world such as we've never seen in originations before. And so there's a lot more to this, but let's take a brief break for this word.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals, providing classroom and web-based delivery, and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
Good to have you back, and I just got to put a word in for those of you that are looking for training and for those of you that are looking for information about all that is going on out there, whether you're running a trade association or have just your local meetings or your company, and you want to bring someone in to speak to your organization, to your company, to your group about what is going on, I tell you, there's not anyone that is probably more in touch with what's happening with regulation, all aspects of the industry. And I'll tell you, Alice can take, and her staff can take some of the most challenging topics like this that are just otherwise quite boring to digest and really get into the heart of it, and will bring to you pertinent, impacting information. So I encourage you to bring her and her staff in. Mortgage U, again, is just an outstanding partner with us. We're thrilled to have them. Alice, let's continue on. There's so much we can talk about the Home Secure Credit Act. I think we're just going to wrap that topic up by telling people, get on the phone. This 120-day period is going to go by so quickly, and I think this is catching some people a little bit on flat-footed or even asleep on it because there's so many vacations going on, and I wonder if this is really going to get the word out. We're going to do our best to get it out and continue to bring it out in this program, so stay tuned. Keep dialing in. We're thrilled to have you listening. And there's another development, though, that just happened. That's H.R. 3126. So that's more of an update, if I have this correct. Right, Alice?
Right, our Consumer Financial Protection Agency bill. So, again, out of that initiative coming from the White House of trying to really get, you know, in their eyes, more regulation and more control over the mortgage industry and other industries, you know, and the whole financial services industry. So House Bill 3126 had hearings the week before last. So July 15th was the first committee hearing. And it was interesting to get some of the feedback on that from both sides of the aisle. You know, if you look at some of the quotes, you know, Barney Frank says no senator on this committee wants to stifle product innovation. But you know what? That's what the bill says. It says if you're not doing a vanilla 30-year fixed loan, you better get this agency's approval.
Unbelievable. You know, you listen to what's coming out of Representative Frank's mouth, and then you see what's coming forth in writing, and it's really hard to reconcile that. I love what Senator Shelby said. If you would read that quote, that is such an amazing quote. I like Shelby. I'm a fan of him.
Well, as he says, I think this would be a very significant and paternalistic departure from the notions of liberty and personal responsibility that have personally guided our regulatory efforts. quite frankly, I find it a bit disturbing and somewhat offensive that the concept of the intellectually deficient consumer has now found a voice in the legislative process. So
that is such a shocking comment, but it, I think, represents so much of the sentiment. Many of us that are out here, whether you be consumer or a member of this industry, we've never viewed the consumer as quote-unquote intellectually deficient. I know he's doing a paraphrase of what he's reading, but it really does kind of sum up, does it not, the attitude of many in the Obama camp towards the viewing of the consumer. These guys are intellectually deficient, and these mortgage bankers are sophisticated, and they're just these really slick, you know, selling folks and selling products at the industry that has really hurt consumers. And granted, there were some experimental products that failed. I mean, but I'm not to sit and say that the consumer is intellectually deficient. Wow.
Well, yeah, it's stereotyping, you know, both of us. It's stereotyping consumers who, you know, up front may have thought a certain type of a product like an option arm was right for them, but market conditions have changed, and so they have challenges now. And, you know, for us as, you know, in the mortgage industry, stereotyping us that we're all bad guys, we're not. You know, it's a few bad actors on our side. But you really just have to say, how do I as a loan officer ever look at a customer and have to say, well, because, you know, the law says you might not understand this product, I can't give it to you.
Exactly right. Yeah, that just goes way beyond anything that we've ever seen, any precedence for programs or legislation.
David, it seems like the money might be better spent trying to eliminate those deficiencies.
Yes.
Right. And I think
which
that
is something we've long promoted, the idea that education is the way to do this.
Absolutely.
Well,
you know,
I think with the CFPA, you know, when you start to look at what they would ultimately do, exactly what you said, Joe, we have regulations in place already to do what they would be doing. We have, maybe if we need some new disclosures or refinement to disclosures, then make those under the existing laws that we have. We don't need another agency that's going to cost everybody dual regulatory responsibility.
Scott, you had a comment. I heard you interjecting.
I was a little bit of a personal note here. Those option arms, when we built our home in 1999, I took one of those from the old First Nationwide mortgage. It was the MTA, and back when they were offering very low margins on them at 1.625, you can look over a history of what that thing had done, but there were times when our interest rate was below 2%. It's down in the twos presently. It's been a wonderful loan. So to say that it's the arrow, not the Indian, is really the wrong approach. You know, it's a great financial tool. It's averaged substantially lower than any fixed rate I could have had at any point in time during that time frame. So, you know, there are some very good products. It's just, you know, misused. People get in trouble.
Well, I think a lot of it came, especially when you're talking about the ARM product. If you look at some of the original ARM product, that was originated, Golden West was one of the ones that did it in the World Savings Group, they had some of the lowest delinquencies. It was actually trading. The original product that came out was very, very conservative. You had to have 20% down. It was just a great product for a particular segment of the group, the population. What happened, what drove this thing, what Alice was referring to is we had a few bad actors, is it became more about market share to meet shareholder quarterly earnings, and the Countrywide jumped into that option arm program and really took that program to taking it to absurd levels. And then it was in one of the webinars I did recently, we talked about the leapfrog effect. Once Countrywide jumped in here, then another Wall Street firm tried to jump in and leap over them. Again, it wasn't about, and this is where it went wrong, it was not about what's going to be good for the consumer, but how we can get more originations in there. So I understand the need for quote-unquote protection, but I tell you, we're misguided in the approach and how it's going about. Especially when you hear the comments of intellectually deficient consumer. That is, I really think that it typifies this administration's approach to this whole issue. Alice, there's some other developments that are going.
Dave,
yes, go ahead.
Just while we're still on that, it's interesting to note that there are wider and wider divisions even among the administration as to the approach to take here, and that. You know, Bernanke is promoting the idea that it's not necessary because he thinks it ought to be within the Fed, and it's not. It's easy to figure out why that he's released this new proposed regulatory change because he's showing that he can be a consumer advocate and protect the consumer. But I think it's somewhat fortunate that this is not getting the same support as some of the other proposals that have come before us. And,
well, again, I think this is important to point out. This is a bill that's moving through the House, and there's a lot more process to be involved in here. And I think we're seeing, on an increasing basis, a number of people defecting from Obama's approach to a lot of this. And I think that's encouraging. So I think there's a lot to be developed there, especially when you're looking at Assistant Secretary Treasury Barr's comments. That a regulator approach would alleviate many of the inter-regulatory finger-pointing. And we're talking about the finger-pointing. And, Alice, if you bring out he who has the biggest finger rules, we have had a lot of that.
Well, yeah, you've got finger-pointing, regulators pointing at each other. And so who is the CFPA going to point at? I mean, if they say you are faulty in your consumer advocacy or who you're offering products to, how do I as a banker protect that against what my other regulators are telling me? And I'm a consumer advocate, by the way. I mean, I don't want to come across as, we want consumers to have clear information. We do a lot of teaching at a very basic level and understand what it takes to help people understand basic mortgage concepts so that they make the right choices. That's all that's needed, and, is some better education at that level for consumers.
Well, I think one of the thoughts is that, adding another agency truly, going to lessen regulatory costs? The answer is, how can it? How can they possibly say that adding another agency is going to truly lessen the regulatory cost? I mean, I think what we're trying to achieve is it would be great if we had truly one regulatory body that oversaw the whole thing. But that's really not what's being proposed here. We're just adding another regulatory body into the mix, and that's the biggest question. Let's go on to the next topic. We've got some other developments. This is brand new. Alice is always bringing forth the latest HR, the House bill initiative. This is 3195. Alice, jump into that. When did this come on the rise? This is, when you say new, it sounds like just last week.
Yeah, it was the week before. This is a quick one. This is just simply that they want to expand the data that we're reporting federally. So right now, many of you may be familiar with the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act report. All loan applications, once it becomes a loan application, we have to report action taken for the creditors that make loan decisions and loan purchases. And we have to report basic information, the income, where the property was located, race, sex, and ethnicity information. Well, they want to add to that and add a national home mortgage and loan performance registry to maintain an inventory of the supply and performance of the loans. Right now, all this foreclosure data we're getting and performance data is coming from private industry and some association and trade groups. There isn't a formal way for lenders to actually report what they are doing to a federal agency. Although it's a little bit of a reporting burden, I think that the data might be very valuable.
Well, they're also talking about adding appraised value, loan terms, the lowest rate for which the borrower qualified without a payment of a discount points, commonly referred to as the par rate. And then there's a number of factors in here. I mean, on the surface, again, this was one of those things that it's just expanding HMDA, as we refer to it in the industry. And is this a good thing? Your assessment, is this got purposes or unintended consequences related to this, Alice?
Well, I think like any House bill or any bill, you have to go say, what's the premise? And then I'm going to work on getting out the details that don't make sense. Like, it's not possible for us to quote the lowest rate for which the customer would have qualified for. So that I agree with you, is a crazy sentence within the regulation. But putting in the appraised value, and we have some fundamental issues about the loan type, but not the whole loan terms. I think the delinquencies is the piece that would be worth reporting, although the servicers, I'm sure, are cringing at that idea.
Well, and Joe and Scott, you guys both know, I mean, par rate at one place is different than a par rate at someone else. So, I mean, when you start getting in and saying par rate, are we going to all of a sudden establish an industry standard of what the – a national standard for what the par rate is and get a consensus there?
Yeah, and you know that ties into what we were talking about earlier on, that you know, if you limit broker conversation, will there just be a standard rate for you know, certainly not set by the Fed, but you know, within a company? What strikes me about all this are a couple of things. Alice, you have job security because every week your list of topics.
Wait a minute, I'm self-employed.
Yeah, well, you got self-employment security then.
And, you know, the reporting that is suggested by all of this. But then, Dave, you know, you said this might go under the radar with people being on vacation. And in a lot of ways, to me, it's like it might slip under the radar just because it's, oh, well, it's just another bill. And,
yeah,
you know, it used to be something would be a watershed event. It'd get some attention. But, my goodness, there, you know, there's so many, you know, absent this and being involved in this, you know, I'm certain some of these would escape my radar.
Well, I, you know, it's the sheer volume of what's coming on. And what's shocking to me, we're up in northern Minnesota on vacation. We're doing this broadcast from northern Minnesota. And on the drive up from Texas up here was a two-day drive, wonderful drive with the family. We were talking about all this and going, how has one administration put so many initiatives forth, and not just mortgage lending? We look at the volume of mortgage lending, but you look at health care is another one. It's just... it's rampant, the amount of what is behind this. Who is the individuals that are writing this? What entities, private interest groups, are really writing all this stuff? It's just, and really, what is the agenda behind it? And I don't want to go off into that, but it is astounding the rate at which we are seeing bills. The bills are one thing, but rules, like what we talked about earlier, is rulemaking can go through so much more quickly. This is going to have the process of going through. We can have the chances to opine, add comments to it. But, again, they're pushing these bills through very, very quickly. Alice, I know you were wanting to jump in there.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, yeah, all we can hope for, Scott, is that there's so many of them that they just don't have time to pay attention to any of them. Because when you look at the list of what's sitting on the House Banking Committee, they got a lot to do. Those guys should be in meetings all day, every day, if they think they're going to get through most of that. So.
Well, the sad part and scary part about that is, if you look at how much they read on passing some of the TARP legislation, I think there's bill stamped there. They're not taking time to read them, and they're just signing these things into law because it's, you know, it's been good for the administration. Again, we're seeing more Blue Dogs, Democrats starting to back away and starting to look at the agenda here, the much broader issue, and going, maybe we better slow this down just a little bit. So there's some indication that maybe some of these things are going to get raced through. One of the things that's really significant about 3195 is quarterly reporting.
Yeah, it was. That's a tough one, is because obviously what they're trying to get to is that there's quarterly foreclosure and delinquency data available from the lenders themselves and not independent resources that may only have partial or the data is interpreted differently between one resource to the next. So I think that's what they want it quarterly, so you can base economic indicators, or it can be one of the economic indicators.
Well, you know, that sounds good, but it's just adding what was a process to be able to turn out four reports where we had to turn out one report annually. It's going to have an impact on the cost of mortgage banking, which is, you know, just continuing to add barrier of entry for many. And so a lot going on out here. We're going to continue this discussion right after this word.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry. Whether you need a new warehouse line or making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions, or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit, broker-to-banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs. If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
And we are sitting here ready to help you do just that. A lot of people are talking about capitalization. Clearly, the capitalization requirements have consistently throughout this year gone up, and we're going to see that. Fannie and Freddie now are at $2.5 million minimum capitalization. Jenny Mae has gone up from $250,000 to $1 million. There's lots of talk about all these warehouse lines. Probably the most significant area where greater capitalization is needed. And for many warehouse lenders, it's now $3 million to $5 million to really get into that. And many people are saying, I don't have that kind of money. They throw their hands up. I'm telling you right now, give us a call. We'd love to talk to you. There are many options to meet the capitalization requirements of your company. I'll put out just this one word. Forbes recently did a report that talked about billions. I believe the report was $44 billion is one of the numbers that I heard. I'm not sure if that's exactly the right quote on that, so I'll put a little caveat disclaimer by that. But $44 billion sitting in cash on the sidelines looking for a decent place. We were in a conversation recently with an investor. He says, I've never found it so hard to invest $500 million. And that's how much money he had to get invested. He says, I've never had such a hard time getting this invested. In other words, there's lots of opportunities. But getting this money invested has been a bit of a challenge. So there's investment capital out there. Do not argue for self-imposed limitations is the comment I make to many of our clients by saying that you don't have the money, you don't have the capital base. There's ways to bring it in. We welcome that opportunity to visit with you. Alice, let's get back to the SAFE Act. That's one of the items that's on our agenda today that we want to talk about. There's several more. The SAFE Act, why don't we give a quick update on that?
Well, I guess I'll just simply say there are about 11 or so states that are due to kick in with the SAFE Act on July 31st. And actually, if you go to the National Registry website, you can get all the information and update to find out where your state status is, and especially if you're doing loans in multiple states, you can find out what's going on with each state. It is a process. Each state is implementing it on their own timeline based on what the verbiage is in their state law. But getting onto the National Mortgage Licensing System, every loan officer will have to get registered. That includes loan officers at banks and credit unions. We'll have to get into the system and get an ID number. Then if you're at a lender or a broker, you have to actually pass a new federal test that will be coming out. So that's the phase-in process that's occurring now by buckets of states, maybe 11, 5 to 10 is what we've been told about per quarter will be added to the National Mortgage Licensing System until eventually throughout next year all 50 states will be on that system. And you'll have to take a new federal exam even if you're already licensed in your state or multiple states, but your existing states that you're licensed in, that state exam will work for you. You won't have to take another state exam. So that's an update.
One of the questions I get oftentimes after the program, excuse me again for my voice, is does this going to preempt the various state regulations that are out there? In other words, are we going to be able to get to just let me take one federal test and then that's going to meet all the various states? The word we're hearing is no, it is not. Is that correct?
Well, it doesn't preempt the state law, so each state has to address it within their own, and so this sets a floor for minimum requirements. The states can be more strict. And then there is one federal exam that applies to all 50 states. You go in the room, take your federal test, come out of the room, and schedule a different time. If you're lucky, you can go right back in another room to take your state of Texas test, then go back out, go back in and take your state of Michigan test. You know, each of your state exams are separate.
Okay.
So those will be written by or guided by each of your individual states, but still administered by Pearson VUE, the national testing company.
It is a significant amount of activity again going on across. When we originally started planning our program and the Lincoln and Lending program, we thought it'd be, you know, we're going to cover latest developments in various areas, and a legislative update was just going to be one of them. But with so much going on, it's turning out to be such an important issue. And without question, the bulk of the emails we're getting is on this very area. People are very appreciative of us digesting this for them and giving them updates. Let's go move on into H.R. 3146 to expand the FHA mortgage lending insurance programs.
Well, we finally have a new assistant secretary and FHA commissioner, David Stevens. So there are a couple of bills. This one is called the 21st Century FHA Housing Act of 2009. It's additional oversight over lenders when they have a certain level of delinquencies. And then there's also bills out there to give FHA more money for staff and technology. So now that Mr. Stevens is in place, I would watch for movement in those, although they haven't moved yet. Just like most of the other bills, to kind of round out, there's a lot out there that we've talked about over the last several weeks. We'll let you know when something's moved, but it hasn't yet. And one of the things we were mentioning is the HBCC moratorium hasn't moved. yet, but there's been plenty of discussion about it. Joe, you had mentioned about Freddie Mac kind of making a counterpoint to this HVCC moratorium pending bill.
Well, actually, it was the Federal Health and Finance Agency, the regulator over Freddie Mac, that put out it's a notice dated July 22nd, but they styled that there has been misinformation in the marketplace regarding the negative consequences of implementing HVCC, and basically they're encouraging that the industry and all involved sit back and kind of give it more time. You know, explaining that the benefits way outweigh the negatives, and you know, a lot of the complaints with HVCC has been the quality of appraisals, and quite frankly, maybe that they're coming in lower than they should. And the Federal Housing Finance Agency tries to pinpoint that is a result of the, you know, falling real estate values, the difficulty in doing appraisals in that kind of market. But basically, they're putting out their propaganda, if you will, to say, hey, this is not all that bad, and whatever's bad, we just need to give it more time to work itself through.
Well, I think the, you know, the argument or the opponents, what they're bringing up is that, you know, there's a certain cost to an appraisal, and appraisal costs have gone up for everybody. There's no question. But this AMC layer, and I think even more so the internal department to manage the AMC, needs funding. That increases costs. So what they've done is squeeze the appraiser and the fee that's being paid to the appraiser. And there was some talk about getting less than qualified appraisers and regions that they weren't familiar with the market, and hence, you know, this all feeds into the lack of quality in the appraisals that we're seeing. Now, you know, certainly I think, you know, for a lot of people, lack of quality would be defined as the appraisal came in low. And, you know, the argument could be made that there would be some areas that there are appraisal issues. But I know in our origination business, we have our frustrations with it. There is no question.
Well, there are some that we could go on and on about that. There's a couple of hot topics that are really kind of setting the phones on fire for many, many people. It's the Mortgage Disclosure "quote unquote Improvement Act." We love the word improvement in there, don't we? Love it at all. But there's panic has set in. Tell us about that. You've been inundated. What did I hear you say this morning? You've already received 130 emails this morning from companies and closing companies.
We walked into this morning because it's this week, you know, so on the 30th, applications taken as of July 30th. Well, this morning is 3 days before July 30th, and everybody woke up and went, holy cow, that's this week. Do I have to worry about my truth in lending disclosures on closings this week? And so we were getting emails from title companies and lenders, and you name it, brokers, lenders, credit unions, all of them going, what do I have to do? And we just wanted to calm people down. It's application date. So therefore, if you have pending, you know, deals that you're just thinking about, you've got a hot lead from a customer, maybe you're treating it as a pre-qual, maybe you should get it all the way to calling it an application by Wednesday, assuming that's legitimate, and that way you get these loans underneath the old regulations. So it's application date as of this Thursday. Those loans have to follow the new multi-layers of rules. 7 days before you close the loan, so from the customer being given the truth in lending, they must have an accurate till at least 3 days ahead of closing. So you have lots of new rules effective with those applications, but not yet, not your stuff in process.
Well, you've helped many lenders through this process. Can you cover really like the three top points here, Alice, that they need to be aware of? It's the fundamentals of this.
Well, what we found when we go in and talk to them at the, you know, at the process level, at the frontline staff, their biggest panic is, well, wait a minute, so if the truth in lending is found to be inaccurate at the time of closing, or it's beyond the tolerance, does this 3 days start up and I have to send people away from the closing, I have to redo it, and a lot of that comes from title company fees. So our recommendation is you must get to know your title company during processing. Don't wait and let it be a surprise just prior to closing. Make sure you get your initial truth in lending on track. Do some things like 30 days of interest adjustment, a little bit of room there for some miscellaneous title fees. You know, you have to be a little proactive to alleviate some of the pain of the three-day waiting period. And maybe you need to go back to the old process of issuing a funding number as a lender, especially if you're just a kind of what I would call a super broker. You've got a couple warehouse lines, you know, you're concerned about, wait a minute, if I mess up on this three-day rule, am I not going to get my loan funded, you know, out of my warehouse line? Just make sure that you've got a clear process to check that HUD one before disbursement so that you know there aren't any changes to that final truth in lending.
That is, there's so many issues here that we can go into. I think the loan numbering process is something that you have pointed out that you may want to go back for many of the originators out here, the mortgage companies that are listening. We may want to go back. You may want to go back and look at the conventions that you're using for the loan numbering process that could begin to help you on this. Most important, though, is that this starts with new applications as of this date. It's not all loans in the pipeline. And that's probably the most important part that would answer probably most of those emails, I would assume.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, folks, we've run close to the end of the program here. We just want to tell you what a joy it is to sit and just visit about all these issues. A lot of these issues are very worrisome for the mortgage industry and for you consumers that are listening in. No question that this is going to have an impact on you. And I would recommend that you stay tuned to the program. Call us. If you have any questions, again, for those companies looking for training, I tell you, get a hold of Alice and her group, her team of professionals for the training program. Also, if you want any updated information on interest rates, what's going on, and all the calendar of events, and it's the many factors that go into the interest rates, MBS quote line. And for those of you that are just sorting through what direction should you go, whether it be, you know, should I get into banking? Should I stay as a broker? Should I just get out of the industry? No, don't get out of the industry. We need you. We need you. Do not abandon this, the many consumers. The good news is, with so many people exiting because this has just been so overwhelming, many are finding themselves overwhelmed with more business than they can handle. So the bottom line is our industry has got to remain healthy, providing liquidity to the consumer as we work our way out of this. Stay involved. Stay tuned. We'll help you through the process. It's a delight to have you on the program every week. We're thrilled to have you here. And we ask you to call your friends and bring them on to the program. Send them the link. We'd love to have you on the program. Send your emails and all of that into us. We'd love to get your questions on. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great week.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr and Scott Sanderson from MBS Quoteline, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.